At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Campsite Media.
All right, you're good, sweet. All right. Now you're just gonna slide your booty on in there.
As I've always said, there are two noble professions left. There are two honorable professions left in this country. Number one is podcasting. Number two is race car driving. And right now, I'm about to attempt to do both. Well, technically not driving the race car. I'll be riding along in the passenger seat, but that's a blurry distinction that you should not focus on. What's really important is that I'm about to fulfill a childhood dream by getting to drive in a race car at full speed around Charlotte Motor Speedway. This is going to be a very, very big day for me. And you're coming along for it. Thank you very much. We'll see how this goes. I made it two laps, and I've been sitting in the car for the last 20 minutes in the parking lot with my eyes closed, trying not to throw up ever since. That was one of the most violent experiences I've ever had in my life. As soon as you get into the turn, that wall of asphalt just looks up at you, and you're just pinned into your seat, just like, oh God, horrible. I felt like my brain was just being squished. That I could not imagine doing that for 2 hours, 3 hours. Just, I will never tolerate someone shit talking NASCAR again. All right, I gotta see if I get back to this hotel.
So, looks like I'm not cut out for race car driving. But embarrassing myself on mic wasn't the only reason I'd come down to Charlotte. Because not only is North Carolina the biggest tobacco producer in the U.S. and where Derek's tobacco came from, it's also the heartland of NASCAR. There's 12 major tracks within a day's drive, and dozens more smaller asphalt and dirt ovals. It's also where almost every NASCAR team is based, including a small outfit called Motorsports Business Management, owned and operated by veteran driver Carl Long.
You doing good?
Yep. Long time.
Yeah, so you just get back from Canada?
Yeah, I was up there for a month and then...
Carl Long's an old hand in the world of NASCAR. He's been in the sport for more than 30 years, as a driver, crew chief, and now as a team owner. It's a lot of work to keep up with the NASCAR season circus. But today is a Monday, and the closest thing he'll have to a weekend for a while. So he's got some time to talk.
Well, what you got, boss? What you want to do?
You got like 45 minutes? We can sit down. I got some questions for you.
Yeah. Let me check with the guys out front and side real quick. Make sure they're all good. He's doing a story on Derek.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Carl and Derek are actually old friends. They go back more than 10 years, when they met in the parking lot before a race in Virginia.
Derek and I just was parked beside each other at Richmond Speedway and got to talking and found out we had a lot of things. I grew up on a tobacco farm, and so I worked on a farm every year. There wasn't any harvesting machines. It was just all manual labor. And my uncle would always tell me, it was early in the morning, all he wanted to see was assholes and elbows just to go up the road and pull the ground leaves, you know. So
you can probably see how Derek and Carl became fast friends.
And then when we were parked beside each other, like I said, we just laughed and had a good time talking to each other.
From what Carl could tell, Derek was the real deal, not just some rich guy playing dress up on the weekend.
I felt like that as a driver, and him coming from the petty driving experience to his truck, to his racing on his other stuff on ice, and he just had a passion to race. He wanted to do it.
At the time, Derek was working with another race team. And according to Carl, it wasn't a great situation.
But the guy that was kind of managing his team really, I guess, had champagne taste with a beer budget and was spending a lot. So the people that he had helping him didn't have the experience to coach him. All they were worried about is, could he write the check for him so they could go race?
It was clear that Derek had ambition, and Carl had the experience to help him hone his skills. So in 2014, they shook hands and decided to create their own team, Motorsports Business Management, or MBM for short, the team that Carl still runs today. There's a million little things you have to do in order to get a brand new team off the ground. But Carl was glad to have Derek as a partner.
Derek was just one of the best overall people that you could be around to help do everything. He wasn't lazy. He wasn't selfish. He enjoyed racing. He enjoyed drinking sometime. I think he was a professional at it. Some races he would go, he'd take some of my guys out at night. He'd be spring chicken ready to go the next day. My guys would be, oh, man, we've tried to go out with Derek. Oh, God, I don't know how you could drink that much and still function, you know? He was buying drinks for everybody in the bar, you know, just having a good time.
Within a few short months, MBM was making a name for itself. Their crowning achievement came in 2015, when Derek raced in New Hampshire and became the first indigenous driver in the NASCAR Cup Series.
Who will hoist the lobster at the end of 301 laps from New Hampshire Motor Speedway?
But less than a year after that race, it all came to a screeching halt when Derek was arrested and Carl got a phone call from NASCAR.
No matter what, Derek was going to get banned. And we dissolved Derek's partnership where he was no longer an owner of MBM Motorsports.
From Campside Media and Dan Patrick Productions, this is Running Smoke. I'm Rajiv Gola, and this is Episode 4, White Lightning. Whenever a driver is accused of misconduct, NASCAR acts quickly. Officials told Carl that he had 72 hours to completely remove any trace of Derek from MBM Motorsports, or the entire team's eligibility would be in jeopardy. On top of that, NASCAR indefinitely suspended Derek from racing in the series.
They didn't call me. They didn't. I read it on the... Basically, somebody sent me the link saying that they suspended me. I didn't even go to court yet. You're already banning me, you know, like I made my my debut there in the top tier, the Cup Series. And then next thing you know, the year after, boom, I'm fucking suspended.
We reached out to NASCAR for comment several times, but they never responded to our requests. In any case, NASCAR was not going to stand up in defense of Derek. That was an issue for the courts to deal with.
Usually you're innocent until you're proven guilty, right? But right off the bat, they fucking banned me.
But being suspended from NASCAR, of all sports, because of smuggling and tax evasion charges, well, there's a particular irony there.
I mean, look at NASCAR. I mean, it was built off bootlegging. You know, with the moonshiners and all that. And basically, that's the same thing going on over here.
We'll get into all that right after the break.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
It's no overstatement to say that without moonshining, there would be no NASCAR. The sport was the product of a unique combination of V8 engines and high-proof liquor that could have only come together in the American South. And this week, we're going to take a trip through history to tell you all about how that cocktail came together. For our non-Southern listeners for whom I have nothing but pity, let me give you a quick lesson on moonshine. White Lightning, Clear Corn, Mountain Dew, whatever you want to call it. It's a crystal clear, unaged whiskey made from corn, rye, barley, or whatever else you have on hand. It's made in small batches by mountain men in bibs and beards who work by the light of the moon in backwoods shacks. But what really separates moonshine from any other liquor is the fact that it's untaxed, unregulated, and therefore illegal. Back in the 1930s, when the U.S. government banned alcohol, moonshine was the only way a lot of people in America could wet their whistle, which made it a very lucrative business.
Government agents fight hopelessly against illegal liquor. These homemade stills are but a few of thousands seized and destroyed. Other thousands produce millions of gallons, and countless hundreds prosper in business of bootlegging.
But moonshining represents so much more than some folks making money on the side. For the people who made shine, it's a symbol of pride and self-reliance. And in that way, it's a lot like tobacco in Mohawk territories. For communities that have often been on the short end of the stick, liquor and cigarettes offered a way for them to stand on their own feet, even if it meant you were a criminal in the eyes of the law.
Making moonshine was a God-given right. It was tradition. It was family business.
Neil Thompson is a journalist and the author of Driving with the Devil, about the early days of American racing.
And the moonshine was used for many things. It was medicine in some cases, it was currency, it was a homemade craft. And in their view, the government had no rights to that. It was their product, and it was their right to deliver it wherever they saw fit.
This is where the story of American stock car racing begins. But delivery is a very polite way of saying contraband smuggling. And where there's contraband, there's cops. So moonshiners took their Ford V8 coupes and stiffened up the rear springs, so when they filled the trunk with liquor, it wouldn't squat and look suspicious. They knew that cops liked to shoot out radiators, so they put sheet metal in their grills to protect their motors. Some moonshiners even had James Bond-type gadgets that dropped nails or spilled oil behind them.
Even though there was an intense cat and mouse aspect to this chase, this game, there was also a sense of mutual respect. One of the guys I talked to, there was a story about him once delivering flowers to the hospital bed of a revenue agent who he'd outrun and left in a ditch on the side of the road, but he knew the agent had gotten hurt, left him some flowers, and just signed it the coupe, meaning his Ford V8 coupe.
Henry Ford famously said that auto racing began 5 minutes after the second car came off the production line. I'd be surprised if it took that long for whiskey runners to get the same idea.
They were running moonshine, trying to get away from revenue agents, trying to stay alive and stay out of jail. And along the way, they learned to drive fast, fix up their cars to go faster than the revenue agents. And then on weekends, for fun, they started racing each other.
Moonshiners would hire young kids to drive for them, young, fearless kids to drive for them.
Tom Jensen is the curatorial affairs director of the NASCAR Hall of Fame and a longtime motorsports journalist.
And the people who own these businesses tended to know each other. And one guy would say to another, you know, my driver's got the fastest car in the county. And the other guy would say, no, my driver's the fastest car in the county. So they decide to have a race with just the two of them. Well, word would get out and some neighbors would show up. And, you know, maybe the next week there'd be three or four guys from the next county over with their race cars.
Stock car racing was radically different than the sort of racing that Americans had known up until then, which was something reserved for the ultra wealthy.
It was sports cars. It was sort of the open wheel cars that you see in Le Mans and Formula One and Indy cars, the types of cars that a poor Southern boy could never dream of affording. And most of those earlier car races happened on tracks that were built specifically for those races, and most of those races happened up north or in the Midwest.
Stock car racing offered something totally different. It brought motorsports to the everyman. Teenagers scraped money together and fixed up junkyard cars. Main Street mechanics would sponsor buddies to turn a few laps down at the local track.
Down south, where you didn't have any real professional sports until like the 1960s, this sort of sport-starved part of the country adopted stock car racing as its own. You know, it was truly a homegrown sport throughout the South, modest in the beginning.
For years, stock car racing was just a ragtag affair. There were dozens of different race leagues and competition series full of shady promoters and hobbyist drivers. It wasn't until Bill France, an aspiring racer in Daytona Beach, brought together all the biggest promoters under one banner that racing really became professional. France gave it a name, too. The National Association for Stock Car Auto Racing, or NASCAR for short. And right away, Big Bill had a big problem. Moonshiners. He was trying to build an above-board, legit racing league that was family-friendly and amenable to corporate sponsors. Bootleggers aren't exactly the crowd to put on a suit and tie and talk nice in front of a microphone. But at the same time, the Moonshiners were the ones winning the races. Because as Hall of Famer Junior Johnson once said,
nobody ever loves a car more than a moonshiner does. Because if you go to a race and lose, you go home. If you go on a moonshine run and lose, you go to jail.
Folks like that weren't going to play by the rules. And Bill France found that out right away. The winner of the very first NASCAR race ever in 1949 was disqualified for using modified heavy-duty rear suspension, a trick straight out of the bootlegger's handbook.
You know, I talked to one ex-moonshiner who told me, you know, the best way to get a hillbilly to do something is to tell him not to do it. It was how they were raised to view the government with distrust and to avoid paying taxes at all costs. So this attitude that was there from the start of stock car racing, this sort of nonconformity, it was in the blood of both the moonshiners and in turn the NASCAR racers.
One of my favorite stories is there was a track in Georgia, I believe it was called Middle Georgia Raceway, that opened in the late 60s. And shortly after it opened, the feds raided it, and underneath the track, there was a entire moonshine operation. There was a 1,200-gallon distillery, and they made illegal liquor down there. And they arrested the track general manager. They introduced as evidence the fact that he'd bought 3,000 pounds of yeast, some absurd amount. And he said, no, that was for our concession stands. And a jury of his peers acquitted him in like a couple hours.
There's an old joke in the racing world that sums it all up. A race car driver reads a rule book twice. First, to see what it says, and then again, to see what it doesn't say.
They would interpret it like people interpret the Bible. They see what they want to see. Give you a good example, and again, we'll go back to Junior Johnson. Rule book says car got away 3,400 pounds at the start of the race. Don't say nothing about what it got away after the race. He would weld 100 pounds of lead to the inside of each of the four rims on his car to make minimum weight. And at the first pit stop, it would take forever to change the tires because they weighed 160 pounds each. But from then on, his car would be 400 pounds lighter than anyone else's, which technically was not against the rules.
By the 60s and 70s, NASCAR was flourishing under Bill France's leadership. The racing was more intense, the fans were more committed, and the racers were more professional. But France still had a problem. NASCAR was just a southern sport, a sideshow to the MLB and NFL. Bill wanted the main stage, and it took a blizzard and a fistfight to get him there. Coming up after the break.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
You're listening to Run and Smoke from Campside Media.
It's February 1979, and the NASCAR season is kicking off in Daytona Beach. Usually, it's a race that only Southerners would pay any attention to. But this time, it was going nationwide. A freak blizzard had canceled every sporting event in the Northeast, forcing NBC to put NASCAR in its primetime slot. A sports-starved country tuned into its first stock car race, and the action was intense. Fans in the stands were on their feet, cheering as drivers came around the front stretch. It's the last lap, and a side-by-side battle heats up between Donnie Allison and Cale Yarborough. Cale's crew chief is none other than the bootlegger's patron saint, Junior Johnson. On the last lap, coming around turn two on the back stretch, Cale makes a move on Donnie, and now they're neck and neck. Their doors are inches away from each other as they reach speeds upwards of 150 miles per hour.
Two of the greatest fiddling here, fidgeting with first place.
Folks back home have their noses pressed up against the TV, and silence falls over wrapped bus terminals and airport bars across the country.
All come down to this.
And then...
Cale hits him! They hit again! They drive in the turn! They're hitting the wall! They're head on the wall!
They slide down into the infield as Richard Petty comes from behind and takes the checkered flag, winning the 1979 Daytona 500.
Petty wins it!
But while Petty is taking his victory lap, the two drivers on the infield grass climb out of their cars.
And there's a fight between Cale Yarborough and Donnie Allison.
You couldn't write a better finish.
The most amazing, astonishing Daytona 500.
For the first time in its history, NASCAR was now on the national map. Sponsors wanted in. And NASCAR provided an incredible opportunity for any company that wanted eyeballs on their brand. What's better than a billboard moving at 150 miles an hour? Money flowed into the sport and the race winnings went even higher. So competition got tougher, drivers got better, and mechanics got more creative. Instead of dumpster diving in junkyards, engineers developed new, exotic, purpose-built parts for their engines and suspension systems. They took the sport out of the hands of backyard mechanics and brought it into the space age. Innovation and rule bending was getting to be an expensive necessity for anyone that wanted to remain competitive.
I think where the real escalation took place was in the early to mid-1990s, when it kind of became an arms race of who could outspend the other to try to gain an advantage. Because what had happened is there were fewer and fewer places to get an advantage, and there were smaller advantages to get.
NASCAR's job as a governing body was to level the playing field and keep it as fair as possible, no matter how much money teams were putting into their cars. But racers will still look for every advantage they can get.
For instance, when I first got into the sport in the late 90s, was the first time they started hiring quote-unquote professional pit crews. NASCAR teams, the top teams, went from having fat, middle-aged guys who were mechanics, also double doing the pit stops, to creating recruiting programs where they'd go to college campuses and recruit athletes who played on football and basketball teams. And so they replaced the 40-year-old guy with the beer belly with a 22-year-old kid who was cut and fit and athletic, and they were paying these guys a lot of money. And things like that just drove the costs way up at that time. Spending money doesn't guarantee you will be successful. Not spending money guarantees you will not be successful.
As the sport got more expensive, it became more exclusive. It became harder and harder for blue-collar guys to find success, and it became easier for well-funded teams to outmuscle smaller outfits on the track. Few people understand how difficult it is to compete in the sport better than Carl Long, Derek's old business partner. He knows just how much every dollar counts when you're racing at the back of the pack.
It's asinine on the dollar amounts. Just, and I haven't even started adding up for this weekend. I might even actually have the sheets. I do. I was just figuring this up. So here's something for you. This is just to tell you what I spent at Atlanta in Xfinity. The wrap on the car was $1,500, and that's cheap. We spent $13,600 in tires.
We spent $1,200 in hotels for one night.
The van's $400.
The entry fee was $2,200.
The fuel just to put in my tractor to get down there was $1,500 and back. Food and drinks and our coolers, $200. $460 for a box of lug nuts that you just use once and throw away.
To rent the engines was $30,000.
Pit bonuses, that was $1,500.
My labor
just for the weekend was $20,500.
We have to rent our pit guns. That was $700.
That was $300.
Well, on a transmission was $600.
All in all, Carl spent more than $80,000 to run a single race that weekend. And that's not even counting truck payments, insurance, and rent.
So I'm in the hole on a good weekend, finishing 11th with no damage. I'm in a hole $1,500 as it is.
It's like the old timers say, how do you make a small fortune? Well, you take a large fortune and you go racing.
For me, at my level, the most important talent a driver can have is somebody to write a check to put them in a seat. The most important talent is to be able to write a check.
In less than 50 years, NASCAR went from a blue-collar sport where shade tree mechanics could race their sedans on Sundays to a multi-billion dollar enterprise with tracks across the country, race cars worth $500,000, and drivers who were trained to race as soon as they can walk. Back in the day, pit lane would have been full of pot-bellied mechanics, tuning carburetors with their pocket knives. Now, it's full of movie stars, celebrity owners, and more computers than mission control. For a team like MBM that was barely scraping by on its best weekends, Derek was a godsend. It's tough not to imagine how far they would have come over the last 10 years if Derek hadn't been arrested.
We would be further up the, probably further up the food chain. We would have definitely ran, I guess, if we had all of the money he spent on lawyers and stuff like right now that was invested in racing, hell, Hendrick might needed to borrow something from us.
Do you think you would have kept racing Cup if it wasn't for this?
Probably. Oh, yeah. I'd probably have a couple of top 20s.
As soon as I'm free from all this stuff, I'm going to look for a goddamn good lawyer in the States and sue NASCAR too. Mm-hmm. Because now it's going to be 6 years in April that they banned me. And you figure all the races that I'm missing, you even put it at 40th place and say, well, I'm losing all that money. I told Carl about it. He goes, God damn. He goes, we're in the 20s now, so suit him for the 20th place.
The difference between a 40th place finish and a 20th place finish could be tens of thousands of dollars in winnings. But it also means being closer to the front of the pack, where the action and the attention is. It means a chance at moving up in the sport. But now, if Derek is allowed to race again, he may have to start all over.
You can't. Doesn't matter if you got billions of dollars. You got to start at the bottom like anything else. You can't just jump in a cup car and go racing. You have to work your way up. Now, I haven't raced in a car in over 5 years, so I don't know if I'm going to have to start back again from the bottom. Basically, go to do the trucks, do short track, then go to a mile and a half, and then a super speedway, then start over in the Xfinity, do a few races in there, and then, you know, then finally it'll give me my license to run in a cup to go to Daytona or wherever. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know, it sucks. We're fighting it, and they put a ban on me, you know, like, aren't you supposed to be, like, proven? You got to be guilty before they do something, right? Now it's you're guilty and then you got to prove yourself innocent, which is not right. I mean, I'm innocent right from the start, so.
Carl had a lot of back and forth with NASCAR officials to see what it would take for Derek to get back in a car. And the answer they gave him was unequivocal.
When Derek is free of criminal charges, then he's free to race for NASCAR.
For Derek to get back on the track, he had no option but to face a jury. Next time on Running Smoke.
They just want to just round up as many people as they can and charge everybody and try to get as much money as they can out of everybody.
I'm just helping a friend. That's gangsterism.
They think we're criminals. They want to make us look like criminals. In their eyes, we're doing something wrong.
And I remember Derek's lawyer getting all excited and pumping his fists and was really happy. So I'm like, well, that's got to be a good thing.
Running Smoke is a production of Campside Media, Dan Patrick Productions, and Workhouse Media. The series was written and reported by me, Rajiv Gola. Our producers are Aaliyah Papes, Lane Gerbig, and Julie Deniche. Our editors are Michelle Lanz and Emily Martinez. Sound design and original music by Mark McAdam. Additional sound and mixing by Ewan Lai Tremuin. Additional reporting by Susie McCarthy. Our executive producers are Dan Patrick, Josh Dean of Campside Media, Paul Anderson, Nick Pinella, and Andrew Greenwood for Workhouse Media. Fact-checking by Mary Mathis, artwork by Polly Adams, and additional thanks to Greg Horn, Johnny Kaufman, Sierra Franco, Elizabeth Van Brocklin, and Sean Flynn.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bissell Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.